Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
Welcome back to this episode of the Blue Collar BS podcast. I am your co-host, Brad, along with the wonderful co-host sitting in Detroit, Michigan,
Steve.
There you go. Hit your mark, Steve. You got to hit your marks.
Yeah.
People don't have time for dead air.
Yeah, got it. So today we kind of want to talk a little different topic. And we want to talk about maybe some of those everyday heroes that we don't necessarily give, we don't talk about a whole lot, we don't talk about our influences a whole lot, but want to take a moment today to actually talk about one of Brad's everyday heroes that never wore a cape. Brad shared a little bit online that his father passed away recently, and that he never wore a cape, and that he never needed to. So want to talk more about what that actually means from how that impacted you, Brad, and how your father helped shape who you are today.
All righty, we'll see if we can get through this.
Yeah. So so this might be a little heavier and a little different than
this will be back to the 1980s, a very special episode of Dallas.
For those that know what Dallas is, other than it's a town in Texas. So
yes, this may be a very emotional journey. It might not be. We'll see what happens. We'll see what comes out, and we'll see where everything hits.
So you happen to post on LinkedIn that your father, he showed up for work every single day, no matter how he felt.
I don't remember a sick day ever. And if there was, it was because he had a surgery or actions. Well, he got hurt, right? I remember him blowing out his Achilles when we were at a softball tournament. So he couldn't necessarily go to work that week, that couple days. So it was medical, but the sniffles, the colds, the coughs, the flus, the whatever, I don't remember a single day being missed.
So your dad, tell everybody, what did your dad do?
So when I was really young, he worked at a grocery store called Red Owl as a produce guy. And then Red Owl grocery stores went away here locally. And then he went to work for an organization called American Industrial, which was all of the old rotary hand towels that were in the locker rooms and bathrooms, industrial towels, uniforms, rags, all that type of stuff. So driver sales for them, and then went and was there till he retired. Teamsters local driver's union. He was a union steward, union rep, manager for the union, did a lot of different things there. I remember him going through some negotiations where, right, they're trying to get some insurance costs and pension things, and the contract that was offered by the company supported that, but the union rejected it because they wanted like 25 cents an hour more. And he was so frustrated and so pissed off about that. It's like, now he was at a different point in life because he had his family, different things. He was probably 40s ish at that time, where everybody else is in their 20s, early 30s. So it's like, well, yeah, give me the money. Yeah. So, you know, if I put him at 40, so 44 plus 40, that would have been 1984, 85 ish. So probably my junior, might have been a little younger than that. Junior, senior year of high school, might have been before that, might have been freshman year.
Okay.
So we did that driving. And one of the things that was awesome back then is that got me on my path for loving industry is he would have some, if there was a holiday week, there'd be a Saturday time. So I would jump in the truck and I'd go with him. So we were able to go see, you know, the body shops that he serviced, the Falk Corporation in the valley here in Milwaukee, right? Do his thing, walk around, go see all these things, put my safety glasses on as this little kid doing all these things and seeing all the big machines and having all the smells and all the things and seeing all the stuff. And probably did two or three of those rides. You'd never get away with that today, but back then it didn't matter. sit in the big old truck with nothing. Just, hey, sit down on the stoop that goes to the back and hold on if something happens, right? There was no seatbelt. There was no seat. There was nothing. It didn't matter. Yep. Right. But being able to see all that industrial stuff was pretty cool as a young person to see what was going on. Now, my dad was not mechanically inclined, mm-hmm. was not creative and willing to try to fix anything or do anything. So didn't really have a lot of that experience. That all came from my neighbors, and my neighbors growing up had first neighbors growing up down at the end of the block. They raced motorcycles. Scott Zampak was actually got into like a level one high profile mm-hmm. asphalt bike race that started out in dirt in our back, right in our neighborhood. And we'd go down there and work on his motorcycles and, you know, do all the things. And the one thing was never put WD-40 on the seat. You know, you can put it on all the boots and things like that to keep it dry, but don't ever put WD-40 on the seat.
Did you ever do it?
Nope.
No?
No, because I'm not going to let him fall off and slide off as he was driving and going through. No.
You didn't ever do it? Just that, like, you knew, like, hey, if you put WD-40 on the seat, this is what?
No, it was a race. On the non-race bike, yes. But back in the day when Honda had three-wheelers, right, they had one of the three-wheelers, and we would use that in the back and the side of the alley and all that stuff. But my dad had no interest mm-hmm. in any of those things or any of that stuff, and I would take things apart, put it back together, do different things, but that was mm-hmm. not his strong suit.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I was doing brake jobs this would have been eighth grade, parochial grade school. The principal nun brings her Volkswagen or whatever to our house. I do the brakes on the car for her. Doing the brakes for her car. And then I'm driving around the block, just driving, right? So we're on a dead end. There's three houses, alleyway, right next to the freeway, 100% residential area. And I'm taking this car around the block four, five, six times, making sure the brakes work. And holy shit, they were so pissed. My dad is so pissed. He's like, what are you doing driving that car? I'm like, I got to make sure the brakes work.
In eighth grade.
How'd you learn to do that? I'm like, what do you mean, how do you learn to do that? I've watched you guys drive cars forever.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, you know, looking back, one of the things that you had pointed out is how he taught you discipline. So
so that would have been the get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn approach?
He was very much right. The lawn, the yard, the hill, the things. That was there was a way to do it, and there was only one way to do it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I have some of those characteristics built into me now. And mm-hmm. the same thing with snow blowing or shoveling the alleyway or the mm-hmm. sidewalk, the stairs. If the sidewalk is 48 inches wide, then you shovel 48 inches, not 47 and a half.
No, yeah.
You shovel not 48
and a half? Not 48 and a half?
No, because that would be the grass, and you don't mess with the grass. Right, running up and down the hills or things like that, or you know, cutting the corner, riding our bikes and putting the big old divot on the corner and running. It's like that type of stuff was just not.
Yeah.
Right. There were things that were in place and things that you had to do, and this is what you did. Right. So that's where some of that structure came from, I believe, is here's that. So my yard and stuff, I like taking care of my yard. It's some of my, right, when it's done and it looks great, I'm very happy about that. And I'm sure that came from watching him take the electric mower out and doing all the stuff and edging the lawns and making it be that way. And
so do you have all the lines in your lawn are straight?
No, they're not straight because the yard's not straight. So, but I will cut, cross cut. And so, yes, I will do different things.
You will do the things.
Yes.
You will do the things that I know. As long as it gets cut and the grass clippings are not laying on top of the lawn, I'm totally fine.
Yeah. So yes, he was very meticulous about that. Very, mm-hmm. all those types of things. Like there was a, I remember growing up as a kid, just very young, we had a fence, a privacy fence, because we were on a corner alleyway and this deck in the backyard. So we put up this red cedar or redwood privacy fence for the backyard. And we would, this is the shit, this had to be like third or fourth grade. We would use that fence. We'd put a football on a tee and we'd try to, and we'd kick over the fence and we'd try to play, you know, 500 or whatever. And then we had bushes along the side of the fence and different things in the yard. And, you know, it's like, okay, so we kick it. And if you kick it low, you'd hit the fence and you'd be banging on the fence. Like, and then every time he'd hear the thud, like, what are you guys doing out there? Sorry. Or it ends up in the bushes and now we're climbing the bushes to go get stuff out of the bushes. Uh-huh. Like, what are you, get out of the bushes? Right. There were all those types of things. So.
So what would you say is one of the greatest life lessons that your father taught you?
So there was a point, I don't remember when it was, I'm probably early high, either right before high school. There was a point where there was an integrity piece. So he had to, he decided to put my sister and I in the kitchen. We were sitting there. I was standing there. He was sitting down. To tell us about an incident that he and some others were doing some things that weren't the what should have been done from a sales perspective.
Okay.
And at that point in time, that lesson was probably, he was scared. And I'm like, okay, and I can't really control whether or not what they do or don't do.
Mm-hmm.
But he had built up enough trust within the organization, enough credibility within the organization, and tarnished the reputation probably a little bit, but had done all the things up to that point to be able to survive that situation.
Mm.
But having to come out and tell your kids that situation, that your job or your family or lifestyle might be at risk to your family, was... That is one memory that is sitting there for sure. And then the other one is making it to almost 45 years sober.
Mm. That's cool. That one's cool. What has also your dad taught you about sacrifice?
Well, there was lots of stuff. I mean, I wouldn't say with more observation, I wouldn't say it'd be teaching, right? I mean, when we were kids that playing Cub Scouts, whatever, softball, baseball, parents weren't going to every game.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't doing the things. I mean, grade school basketball, he coached grade school basketball and he'd drive us around. And those were on, I mean, it's a parochial school. So it was on Sunday afternoons. It was one day a week. It was practice one day a week. Mm-hmm. It's like, it wasn't like it is today.
Right.
For my kids, where it's like, hey, it's 5 days a week and you're doing this and you're doing that. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're expected to be at your kids' games. Like, the reason he saw any of our games is because we played together when we started playing for the Knights of Columbus together when I was about 16 years old. So that's how he got to see my game, so to speak.
Okay.
But the other stuff, it kind of just do what you got to do and move forward. Finances were never ever talked about in our house. None of those things, you know, mom cooked, dad. Although dad did the grilling. So I guess that's where all the grilling and stuff kind of came from. And now the smoker and all that stuff is kind of, okay, here's that. Would he get into smoking and that? No, but put the turkey on the grill every year, ham on the grill for Easter, burger, steaks, all those things when we were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
If it was summer, we were grilling. Mom wasn't cooking in the kitchen.
Mm. Okay. That's good. You know, I'm kind of curious. Like, what's the one thing that you say, this is what my dad taught me, that's really shaped who I am as a person?
So it's going to go through a bunch of stories because I can't put a finger on it. And I'll let you summarize what that comes out to be as you have gotten to know me through our Focal Point franchises and doing the show and just in life in general.
Okay.
So, you know, in the post, as I talked about, you know, early on when I was really, really young, bat boy for softball teams, baseball teams, right? Mm-hmm. So having that discipline and awareness of what's going on around you, getting yelled at for going to get the bat without paying attention to the play, what was going on.
Yeah.
Like, don't get in the way or all those types of things, right? Wait for the opportunity to come and get the bat and do those. So mm-hmm. that was part of that early on. Then, you know, as I mentioned, sober 45 years, you know, we would go Saturday mornings to go to the bar and, you know, we'd get there at 9:30. I'd, you know, learn to play pool or play pinball, watch the things, learn how to operate the cigarette machines when he needs to go get more cigarettes. That was always fun. Hey, go get me some cigarettes out of the machine. Great. Here's the coins. Go put it in and go pull the levers and mm-hmm. all that stuff. Or, you know, go to the bowling alley and watch him bowl on Friday nights. Mm-hmm. Part of that and play video games there and just watch and see what's going on in the interactions. And then playing baseball and or softball with him, you know, learning that how to play in his mind, how to play the games correctly, when to go from try to turn a single into a double or when to throw from not hit the cutoff man, when to do the things, when to make all that happen is all part of that. And then as I got older, right? So pretty much once I got into college, still lived at home till I got married, but I wasn't home much, right? It was yep. mm-hmm. working, going to school and going out and all the fun things that went with that. Mm-hmm. So the only interaction was those couple nights a week playing softball, so to speak, right? And even though I was living there, I wasn't present. So those last years of him going to work, doing the thing, the retirement party, there wasn't a lot of that there because I was out living my life as teenagers do, right?
Yep.
And then he got back into when he retired and then they moved out to Conemaugh after they sold their house in Milwaukee. He started golfing. Mm-hmm. Now his dad was a avid golfer and he wanted nothing to do with the game, but then he started golfing. Now I was already golfing before he started. I started getting on my own when mm-hmm. I was that bizarre. So this had to be, probably didn't start golfing until 2012, 2013-ish mm-hmm. is when he probably got started golfing again, you know. So we would have conversations and talk and, you know, he would complain about how golf balls don't make a difference and all this other stuff. I'm like, they do. And then he finally realized, he talked to the club pro and goes, oh, I switched out my golf ball and it really made a difference. I'm like, no shit. Yeah. Because I get geeked out on stat, all that type of stuff and the data and the stats and the technology and all those things. And he's like, oh, it doesn't matter. Golf ball's a golf ball. Golf club's a golf club. It doesn't matter. I'm like, it does.
Yeah.
It really does. Mm-hmm. You know, but he was always there for the family, right or wrong. And then as he got older, he, you know, didn't necessarily want to go places and do things. And that's the part that I wish he would have done more of, to go see things that he didn't get to see.
Right.
Or go places they didn't get to go. They went down to Florida for a few years, mm-hmm. off and on for maybe 5 or 6 years for 3 or 4 weeks out of the south winter. That was a stretch for them to go do that. But it would have been nice if they would have done some other things differently that they could have done more along the way. But mm-hmm. so I don't know what that one thing is out of all of those pieces.
Really?
And bits.
Oh, this is easy.
Good for you, this mother is easy. Trucker.
This is easy. And I'm kind of surprised. Because what is one thing that you're known for, Brad?
There's lots of things, and I don't know where you're going.
there are lots of things. So there are lots of things. But, you know, from a general perspective, what's one thing I've heard you say over and over again is you have a unique ability to connect the dots and to see what people don't see. And as you were describing all of this, he showed you, without telling you, that you were connecting the dots, how you go observe, how to wait for the opportunity, how to go do this, go figure these things out. He was giving you the instruction. He was giving you the playbook, the recipe for how to go connect dots that people can't see on your own.
Never would have seen that.
So that's just by that, you relaying those stories, that to me is one of the legacies that he's left you.
Alrighty.
So
very cool. That's why I asked you to come up with it, because I'm like, I don't know what the answer is.
Yep. But it shapes who you are every day. How you work with your clients,
operate with your family. That's what I see every day. So it's really cool that your dad was able to instill that in you.
Yeah. Learn how to shake bar dice really young. Mm-hmm. Learn how to play ship captain crew. Learn how to do a lot of things that probably shouldn't have. That in today's world, if somebody took an 8-year-old to the bar to do those things on a Saturday morning, they would get.
Well, you had to learn how to hustle for your quarters too.
But I did. I would play pinball for, right? I might do my chores. Here's my dollar. Take my dollars to go get quarters and play some of the regulars for pinball. I'll play you for, they got really pissed when they'd lose to this 9-year-old kid. My favorite game though is the puck bowling. That was my favorite thing to do.
Yeah. The puck bowling.
You got the bowling puck pins bowling. Sitting on the one end, and you got the little pit, you got a steel puck.
I don't remember this.
Goes down the lane, and you got to go over. You got the two middle lanes that are red dot, right? Two middle lanes. If you hit the middle lanes, you get a strike. If you miss the middle lanes, you get this other thing, and you got to try to get it. Oh man, do I got to find a screen?
I want to call this? Bar bowling game. Let's see if I can find a screen. What do they call it? There it is. Vintage bowling. Strike zone.
Interesting.
This is exactly the game. It was a mechanical one too. It wasn't that's a digital
exactly
one.
The game.
You have the little powder you put on it and all the things. Vintage arcade bowling.
What?
Oh man.
Arcade bowling. Yes. Hmm. That was one of the things. One of the other pieces that I remember is Christmas. Really young Christmas, I got Santa brought this bowling game, this arcade bowling game so the pins are on these strings and you take it. It's like it was almost like you didn't roll the ball, but you kind of used a little shooter gunny thing to move the ball, propel the ball down the lane. And I just remember that Christmas night waiting to get this done. And he couldn't get the string. There was like one string wouldn't tie properly or whatever. It had little clips to connect the balls. And back then, plastic stuff wasn't necessarily the same as it is today. It wasn't easy. The instructions were, it's like way different.
Correct.
Again, like I said, not a mechanical guy, right? Not a let's fix it person. Oh, that was, he was so pissed that night as I was waiting all for this game. It was wow. But yes, the arcade bowling was my favorite bar.
Yep.
Well, that's cool.
How would you, if you, looking back, what's one thing that you would want people to know about your father that they may not know?
May not know.
He was always there. Regardless of all the things, he was always there. Was he going to carry on a lengthy conversation? No, but he was always there and available if something was needed. Now, was that always taken advantage? Was it? No, you guys and the kids, you grow up and you try to do all the things on your own and do all the stuff and go forward. It's like, okay, cool. So he was always there.
Cool. That's cool, because that doesn't always happen for everybody.
No, am I going to say he was always there, right? And I don't want to... There were lots of things. Everybody's got their own stuff, but
yeah,
if I wanted to have a conversation over something, he was there for those conversations and stuff for my kids, myself, my family, whatever, that he would have made himself available, whether or not his demeanor would have allowed that to be seen. In many cases, probably not, but he was always there.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you for taking the time to share about your dad today.
So thank you for taking the time to do this show.
Yeah. Anytime, man. Anytime for this.
Till the next show, sir. I appreciate it very much.
Very well. We'll see you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.